December 18th, 2017,
and we're talking to Don Till, and as we usually do in these discussions, Don, I usually open up by see if you could give us some background on your early years and growing up on the farm south of Farley, was it?
Yep. We lived at Placid, and my dad was a farmer. I had four brothers and a sister, and a little one-room schoolhouse, Placid, Pleasant Grove. Wayne Drexler was the superintendent. He signed the report cards. And then I went to high school at Farley, St. Joe's, played against you,
right.
Bellevue. Then went to Loris and became a teacher. And
how did you arrive at your decision to go in that direction?
I don't know. I liked history. I majored in history, and teaching was just sort of, you know, at that time, I don't think I lived in a rural community and went to school in Farley, and I really didn't see many educated people who weren't lawyers, teachers, or priests, you know.
Right.
I didn't know what an accountant did. So it was sort of natural that, you know, to get into education. And
just backing up a little bit, though, when you were at St. Joe's, you were in the class of 63?
Four.
Or four?
Mm-hmm.
Who else do you remember from being in that?
Oh, yeah.
Those years?
Well, like, you know, you'd know the basketball players, Bill Phillips.
Yep.
Was in my class. Who else? Heisler.
Gene Heisler.
No, he was a year ahead. I played basketball with Bob, his brother. Don Krunlagi. Yeah. You know him, big guy, plays golf. Gary Kropfel, now a priest.
Yep.
Did you know him?
Yep.
Basketball, I really guess it was Charlie Kleesner. He's a farmer in there.
Yeah, just ran into Charlie recently.
Is that right? Yeah, his wife died.
Yes.
And she was a classmate of mine.
Arlene.
Also. Yeah. Dick Smith, he was a classmate. He's still working, I think, isn't he?
He's an adjunct professor at the University
UD.
Of Dubuque.
Uh-huh.
He loves. I did a long interview with him a while back, and yeah, he's really enjoying it. He's one of these people that are like gifted to be a teacher.
You know?
He's just great. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew. I've talked to him a few times. I don't see him too often, but I know he likes it, or he did at that time anyway.
Yeah.
I imagine he's good. That was pretty much who you would know. It was
How about, remember some of the nuns?
Sister Andrew.
Okay.
Did you know her?
Oh,
she was a principal.
Sister Andrew.
And Helen Marie.
Yep.
And Sister Georgia. She taught science. You know all these? Sister Inez. Did you know her?
Sure.
Oh, jeez.
How about Sister Cletus?
The name sound, was she... I don't think I know her.
I had her as a high school kid.
Oh, really?
She was kind of crazy.
Then there was a sister, Inez, Sister Fidelis.
Yeah. It was Father Churchill, and then Father, who was
Father
his?
Dalton was there for a year, and then Father Kepler.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if we should put this on tape.
That's
but,
okay. This is private stuff anyway.
Okay. My brother that just died, he thought that Presentation Nuns did a tremendous job. And he's been donating money to them each year. And they've written him up in their monthly newsletter. In his will, he gave him $500,000.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll end up being $500,000. It's part of his estate. But he said it was his favorite charity was given to those nuns. And but he just thought they did. They gave him a good education, and he appreciated it. And
I'll tell you a story. I just happened along this last spring. The Presentation Nuns, they have that garage sale. You know, they fill that old gym with full of junk. Susie wanted to go to it, so I said, "Okay, I'll go along." So we go there and. We walk in, it's early in the morning, kind of, and there's people all over, so I wasn't interested. So she starts going, there was a table, in a chair, and I sat down. I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, this gal comes up, and it's a nun. And she'd been watching people go through, and anyway, she sits down next to me, and we start, you know, talking and visiting, and anyway, it turns out it's Paula Schwenninger. That'd be Carl Schwenninger's sister.
Oh, okay.
And I had Paula in high school, and she's been working with migrants down in Florida for 25 years or so, but she's had some health issues, so she's back there. And anyway, so we're visiting, and finally she said, she says, I have to confess something. She said, I said, well, what? She said, well, I was the one that drove over your mailbox. She said, we were out driving around, and I don't know what happened, but where you lived, and you know, I hit your mailbox, and they blamed Connie Kleesner, but it was me.
Was that a long time ago?
Yeah. Oh, well, 1969, probably.
Well, you know, Sherry, just, I don't know if you knew Margie Haley. She was a presentation. Sure. She's down in Bolivia or someplace. She was just home, and they got together yesterday. And Margie was telling them that there's no new nuns, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do with my brother's donation because there's, there's no adjoining.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true for BVMs. We heard Sherry has a friend who used to be the mayor of Dubuque, Carolyn Farrell or something. I forget her name. But she said they had a new recruit, and then she backed away. So, you know, they're all old, you know. Anyway. But that's probably the boys that you would know that were in my class.
They played baseball and basketball.
Yep. Uh-huh. And we played Bellevue Marquette, and that's where you were for... Yep. How many years were you down there?
One.
Okay. And, those were the only two sports we had. You know,
oh, yeah.
Baseball and boys basketball. Anyway, I don't know. That's how I... Lawrence.
Your decision to go to Lawrence as opposed to going anyplace else, it was just local and...
I had two older brothers who had gone to Lawrence, and I never considered any other school.
Okay.
I knew, you know, that's where you went when you were in my situation. You went to Lawrence.
You know. Did you go and live on campus then? Or?
Yeah, I lived on campus all 4 years.
Okay, and all?
I lived in Roland Hall for a year and a half, then I went to Benz. And I was a counselor down there, so they paid my room. Like it would be a, what do they call them now, resident advisor or something.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it again. I wouldn't have stayed on campus all 4 years, but I did. And I had, my last couple of years, I had a job. I played baseball in there for 2 years. Didn't play much, but and then my third year, when I would have played, I had a job, and I was sort of tired of the coach. So I quit.
Who was it? Was a
Smart Jesse?
Smart Jesse.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Later, the director of student teaching.
Yes. Yes.
Don't have the same opinion of him that Greg Gumbel has. Did you ever read any stories of Greg Gumbel? Just thought he was great, but
I can tell you. You want me to tell you?
Yeah.
This happened last summer. Lizzie and I went to the Red Roof Inn in Piasta for lunch. Steve Schutte walks in. So he comes over and sits down with us. So we're visiting. Guy says, I'm invited to go to this dinner tonight. I don't know if I should go. He says, it's Greg Gumbel. He was Greg Gumbel's roommate.
Right. Yeah.
And Collins and whoever at the Timmermans. I said, well, you should go for God's sake. Anyway, he said, I lived with Gumbel. We were seniors at Kane Hall, and he said that Father Rogers had a thing for Greg Gumbel. And he always wanted to get Gumbel out on his boat. And, of course, Greg resisted and whatever. And anyway, as it turned out, Greg's thesis had to be approved by Father Rogers to graduate. And Rogers was resisting because of this relationship that never happened. And Schutte said that finally, he said, all of a sudden one day, Greg's father, who was a judge in Chicago, shows up, and he said the next day that thesis was approved and signed.
Well, you know, between you and me, Steve never got along with Kumpel.
Okay.
No, they didn't care for each other. I think it was their freshman year.
He indicated they got back when they were seniors. He was talking about the thesis.
But I never, you mentioned Gumbel, and I never have heard Steve say Greg Gumbel. Mm-hmm. It was always Gumbel.
Okay.
But he was on the baseball team
when
I was there.
Purnell was also, wasn't he?
No. He would have been, my second year I think he was on the team.
Yeah.
Mine would have been Wayne Wilgenbusch.
Okay.
Tom Schultz, Larry Skoranek, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I never cared for Smart Jesse. But I had to have him for student teaching, so I had to at least get along. So
where'd you do your student teaching?
Piasta.
Okay.
Yeah, St. Joe's, or St. John's in Piasta.
Well, that had to be an experience.
Oh, it was. And in those days, you went out for 3 hours. You know, like now they do a whole semester or a quarter. But in those days, you'd have a morning block or an afternoon block. And I went out to Piasta, I think it was in the afternoon. And I taught one class, American History. Frank Dardis was in that class.
Okay.
Bill Weidert. But that poor nun, I forget her name, but, you know, she did the whole day. She taught. No preparation period, no break. Yeah. And she was so happy to have a student teacher there, you know, for 45 minutes. She could leave. And she was a nice lady, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a good experience. I really, I could do what I wanted, you know.
Yeah.
She would never, almost never be in the room. She'd just leave and go take a break.
How many did you have in the class, you remember?
Oh, it was a pretty big class. I don't recall. It's been a long time. I've had a lot of classes since, but I'm guessing I can still remember quite a few. Kenny Teacup's wife, Lenny Teacup's wife.
Yeah.
She was McAndrew, and there was a McGovern and Frank and Bill Weidert, and I forget who else. But but anyway, Smar had to come out, or Smar Jesse had to come out two or three times and observe me, and I can still remember one time. You know, he was supposed to come that day, and he never came into the room, but which I've heard before. He says, "Well, I just sat out in the hall and listened."
Okay.
But the one funny thing, my experience there, in the hallway, there was a button, almost like a light switch, but a little red button on the hall. And I walked by that thing for, you know, 2 or 3 months and wondered, what in the heck, what's this button? One day I pushed it and the alarm went off. Kids are coming out of their classrooms. Oh, don't go back, it was me.
That's too funny. You couldn't resist.
No, I saw that bell for so, you know, it looked like a doorbell. And there was no marking on it. I can still remember all of a sudden these kids, the fifth grade kids, the sixth grade kids are coming out of their classrooms. But it was a good experience. And
Now you're transitioning into, you need a job, so what happens there?
Teaching job?
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting. Before I, between my junior and, I used to work at Ralston Prina. Delivering the paper out there. You used to have a shower. Hey, we got a tape. Hey. No. See what I... This is my Archie Bunker chair, so I don't want to have to get up. But anyway, so my after my junior year, the warehouse closed, Prina. So I had to get another job. So I went out to Farley and got a job building the school that I later worked on. Okay. I helped build our elementary and junior high. Spencer Construction from Spencer, Iowa. And then the next, then I taught St. Joe's, the worker, in Dubuque for a year. And got a contract from Western Dubuque at, you know, about April for the next year.
So did you, how'd you do that with an interview?
I interviewed with Wayne Drexler. I didn't talk to Tom Wickham.
Okay.
Drexler hired me. And
was that,
that was Epworth.
That was what year?
1969.
69, okay.
Yeah. So then I'm hired at Western Dubuque for the fall of 69, and I worked construction for two more months between that my St. Joseph, the worker, end of their year in August. I worked still for 2 months. So I moved in. I'll tell you another story. Because I knew all the workers, you know, all the the construction guys. And the first day of class, I'm in my desk, and I opened the desk drawer, and I remember Becky Butcher. You don't know her, but she was a nice little girl.
Okay.
And there was a tampon in my desk drawer. So I said, "What's this?" And Debbie Butcher almost had a heart attack from laughing. I saw her at a funeral, you know, about 2 or 3 years ago, and she brought that up at the funeral. She remembered it. But the guy, and I, after I held it up, I looked at the classroom window, and there were a couple of construction workers out there laughing.
Were you inside or on a portable one?
My first year I was inside, first couple of years. Dale Suppy was up there, and Gene Hanton, you know, and Jim Motti, we were next door. I'm trying to think who else. There was Diana Heights, I think, was up there.
Okay.
Do you know all these people?
Yeah.
And there was an Even girl.
Diane
Even. Yeah. She was a science teacher. Tom Snyder. And Gene Maurer. Katie McDermott came soon. I think it was Al Main's wife, Jackie. Was her and Gene Maurer were the home ec people.
Right.
And I don't think we had an assistant principal. I think it was just Wick.
I think that's right when it started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the next year, O'Mara. My second year, O'Mara became assistant principal. Who else? Steve Rutz was the PE teacher.
Right.
And Gabe Wilker was the women's teacher. Don't remember if we had a counselor. Who that would have been?
Well, Monty was.
Monty was a class. He became counselor, I think, the next year.
Yeah.
They probably had a counselor, wouldn't they? But I can't remember.
I don't. Maybe they didn't at the first.
Bernice Knipple was there.
Yep.
As a nurse. But that's how I got out there, and I stayed in the main building for a couple of years, and then I don't know when. We got moved out to the classroom where Showalter was, or out to the portables, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't remember when that would have been. But I, so, who else? Any other teachers? Like, Betts wasn't there yet. He was still on the service.
Okay. Chops?
Oh, yeah. Mike was not there my first year. He came the second year. He was over at St. Paul's in Worthington.
See, Mike did his student teaching under me at St. Joe's.
Oh, really?
And because I just remember, he came out and started observing. Anyway, so it was time for his first live performance. And so I'm in the back there, and he's up talking and doing his stuff. And he started by standing up and moving around. Well, then he sat down. He kept sitting down for the rest of the period. So the bell rings and kids leave and we visit. And he said, he says, you kind of saw me stand up and sit down. He says, I noticed that. And he says, well, my pants are falling down. He said, so that was a problem that he had.
Well, he taught over at Worthington. He really liked it. He was, and I think they liked him.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. How could you not?
Yeah, yeah. But then he came, I don't know if I was there 1 or 2 years, but he came real soon.
Okay, yeah.
Because, you know, there was a lot of turnover. We got more tape yet? Or was that fine. Digital? You're
fine. Or? You're fine. Okay. How about, you have... How about the guys? You guys always had a good time in the teachers' lounge. Remember some stories from the teachers' lounge?
I remember one that involved Mike Haley, Kathy Shaw. Do you remember her?
Yes. Black girl.
Black PE teacher, and I guess one day Mike was in there, and he had his back to the door, and they were telling racial jokes. And I wasn't there, but I heard about it. But they were trying to think of all the names they could, you know, what blacks are called, like Jungle Money. And okay. And Kathy walks in, and Mike is. The other teachers are trying to tell them.
Spokes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But that was a funny one. And of course, Catherine Graham, remember her?
Oh God, yes.
Yeah, she was there. And Betts used to like to play baseball in the lounge. he would imitate Larry Durker. That was his pitcher. We'd have a little like a round of ground wadded up paper ball, and then we'd use something for a bat, and he would pitch, and poor Catherine would walk in at the wrong time when we, you know, somebody hit one. But that was always fun. And of course Betts and Mike made everything fun. You know, you couldn't be around him where it wasn't. I can't remember probably any big incidents, but it was always something interesting to talk about. Louis Fouch was there. Yep. Also.
Marv Heyer.
Who?
Marv Heyer.
Oh, Marv Heyer, yeah. But he came after Diane Even, so he was not there the first year.
Okay.
And Louis wasn't either. He came a little bit later. Louis did a student teaching at Piazza as well.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those guys, it was a good group. And
one of the greatest stories, I didn't hear about this at the time, but later somebody related this, that at some point Betts got a tape recorder, and he turned it on, and he had a girl, a student, and he would tell her, okay, now you say, help me, and into the tape recorder, and then he'd just keep the tape recorder going, and she'd do it again, help me. Did this about 4 or 5 times, and so he takes the tape recorder and asks the secretary what was going on. She says, well, there's a parent conference coming up in Wick's office pretty soon. And so he takes it, there's a supply cabinet behind his desk, and he hides the tape recorder in there. Wick's in there with his parents, and all of a sudden, help me.
Oh, my.
Who could ever think of something like
that? Yeah, he was...
He was kind of a genius. When he retired, I got him down to the high school, and we started the student video announcements in the morning. And Allie produced all that and coached the kids. And
the video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
News in the,
yeah.
News in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, he was really into that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he'd do weddings. A lot of weddings. We had our own news show. Bill and I had, what was it called? WDTV or something. We did it with the Phase 3 money. Remember that?
Yep.
And it was great, I thought. We'd have the kids write up a little news story, you know, report about the buses or about sports or about different classes. And then they'd put it together. We all put it together. And then they'd show it on that Channel 1.
Channel 1. No, we did the same thing. Yep.
And I always thought, I'd watch those kids, and I always thought later, well, to teach math, you should have some kid teach it, because, you know, when that show was on, the kids would just, they just paid attention.
They were fascinated.
They were just, yeah. And if you could have had a kid up there teaching them how to multiply or, you know, math,
yeah.
I wonder if they would have paid the same. They just would not look away. And I remember Beth, of course, had the originality, but you know how newscasters will, they'll have, the newscaster will be here and then the report, and then the newscaster will ask a question. Well, now what are they going to do with the old buses, you know? And then they can, so we would put that on the video. They wouldn't be able to hear, of course, but we would have what do they call the anchorman would say, somebody would do a bus report. Now, how many buses do they have? Well, we have, it looked very much similar. I still have some of those old old tapes somewhere. But yeah, those guys, I've often wondered if Bill and Mike, and you know, there are a lot of guys when we first started, Louie, we had a lot of fun. But if they hadn't been there, if I would have stayed as a teacher.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. okay.
It's probably saying something about it to me, but I remember when I did quit eventually, and I told Showalter, and I had the opportunity to go to UD, and my pension, I had my pension, you know, but I told him I had been without, Mike had died, well, Bill had suddenly retired, yeah. Probably 4 or 5 years before that, then Mike died a couple of years before that. And it was just, I remember telling Shoulder, I'm just bored. I've done it enough. And in my last year, that was my toughest year teaching. I had a very difficult group of kids to teach, mostly girls. And I got panic attack. Did you ever have a panic? You probably had I'll finish this one. I thought I was having a heart attack. I had I never had trouble with a class, especially, you know, girl trouble. You know, I had some boys that were, but I had a couple of girls. They were just really difficult. And
girls can be vicious.
Oh, God, I thought I was having a heart attack. And I remember I was up in that old building, and I'd go up and sit in the steps and try to breathe and between classes. And finally, Noonan called the nurse up, you know, and Bernice took me to the hospital and did an EKG, but I was having panic attacks, and finally that's what they diagnosed, and they gave me some anti-anxiety medicine.
Okay.
And I had to carry that with me. For several years I carried a prescription in my pocket, even though I didn't need it, but if I didn't have it, I panicked. Sure. I can still remember when I was coaching, we had all-conference meeting down in Macogata, and I took a Suburban from the school to drive down there, and I left my medicine in my car. I got down maybe to 10 miles away from Epworth and realized I don't have my medicine. I turned around and come home.
Okay.
And, you know, when I quit teaching, and it went away. I don't have them anymore.
Yeah.
But that 1 year, I mean, I thought I was dying. Honest to God.
My only experience with that was when I was started at the high school, moved over from the junior high, and I moved into that job as an assistant principal and an athletic director, which is totally, you can't do both, as I found out. And the stress got to me, and I wound up with a case of shingles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bad case.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I missed a month of school. I will never forget coming back and facing the faculty and the students. I had what you're talking about. I couldn't. I mean, I worked through it, but boy, it was a terrible time.
Mm-hmm. So where did you have your shingles?
Started in my scalp and down the side of my face. And basically in this area, and it was painful.
I had shingles as well.
Yeah.
I think that you're right. It's caused by stress and nerves. But I had them bound, and I caught it. I mean, I told Lisa or Sherry about it, and they recognized it. And so Lisa was working at acute care, I think, at the time. She got a prescription for me right away, and mine was nothing. But have you ever had a shot for it?
Yes.
Have you?
Yeah.
I haven't had it.
I did the shingles shot. I did the pneumonia shot.
Yeah.
whatever I can get, I get, because... Anyway, let's... Okay, pick up, Don, where you moved into the softball situation.
It was 1987, I think. And I had never saw a high school softball game in my life. I didn't have a coaching certificate. But Lisa was going to be in eighth grade. Yep. And Larry had talked to me about it. And I remember saying, well, you know, I don't have a license. Well, you can get that. And I said, well, you know, I might do it. I want to have a good program, but I might do it. But if you can't get somebody else. And they said, well, you can't get anybody else. So I did it. Had to go to get my license. I remember that, going to Frank Dardis and Lynn Steffen, Lynn Pitts now.
Yeah.
Who's the other guy? He's a fixture at Epworth. I forget his name now. But anyway, we went down to Clinton to classes, you know, during the winter. And got my license. And, after I talked, you know, to you guys about coaching, I remember... At that time, they had fall softball, championship, you know, and so we got in the car and drove down. We were lucky; the last game was going to be scheduled for the, you know, right around the time I was hired. So we went down to Des Moines and Urbandale and watched a couple softball games. I had no idea how hard they threw or you know, the effort the girls put into it or whatever. So I went down. I took my video camera down and videotaped pictures and everything. And I was lucky, and I talked to a lot of coaches that were really, I found out later, were very good. And they were all helpful and you know, tried to help me. And then, I got my license and then found out that it did not apply to head coaching jobs in baseball, softball, football, basketball, in almost any contact sport. The license was good for maybe cross country or golf, or to be an assistant coach.
I didn't realize there was a difference.
Yeah, I didn't either. And nobody did. Art Hinker, I worked with him, and he didn't know it. And so I remember here was April or something, and I didn't have a license to be the head coach. And I remember Art mentioned you. He said, well, you know, we can hire Bob as the coach, and you can run it. We'll pay you, but at least Bob will make it legal. Well, I think they must have gotten a temporary or something, because I, that summer then, I had to go to Laura. You had to get that, your license from a four-year college, at least some of the courses, maybe one or two. But I know I took, not care and athletic injuries. That was taught, I think, in Farley, or Epworth, Western Dubuque, but I know I went back to Loris and took a couple classes to get my license, but I think that was after my first year, finished up. And I can remember after I was hired, I went into the Loris. I wanted to find out a little bit about softball, you know, and I went into the Loris library and did I tell you this story? Whoever the coaches were to pass, they seldom called in the scores to the TH.
It was disgraceful.
But I got the sectional tournaments, and I went back, you know, and I forget now if it was 6 or 7 years, Western Duke's team averaged one hit a game, and they're outscored 100-0. It turned out to be exactly 100-0, and most of the games were 2 or 3 innings. Oh. So, you know, I thought, what do I get myself into? But I enjoyed it. And I got Pam Budden, who was in 8th grade, and she wanted to be a pitcher. And she was, as far as I'm concerned, is the most responsible student I had to make our program. Because she brought along fast pitch pitching instead
You realize right away you got to have a pitcher.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you have nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Pam worked at it, and we learned together. I didn't know much about it. I remember Wegman come over and showed me some stuff, and Dick Moss, I got him to show me some stuff. And we did a lot of things wrong. We had a backup. Well, this is wrong. We took her to clinics and stuff. But she is most responsible. If it wasn't for her, you know, we wouldn't have had a good, any kind of a team. Yeah. And then kids would quit again. Because yeah. kids get tired of losing 10 to nothing or, you know, 13 to 2 or something. And but she made us respectable. And the other kids, I could see the other players, they'd come over to Farley and watch me, we'd warm, or, you know, practice pitching, the Bayer girls and Carrie Vasky, and you could just see, they could see, well, this girl's going to be a little better than what we've had.
Yeah.
So, and then it just, you know, I originally thought I'd probably coach until Lisa graduated and then I'd quit, but I really enjoyed it. And,
And despite the, I'm thinking back at the lack of support from the maintenance department for the field care.
Were you there when they put rocks on the field?
Oh, I was there for that.
That was, you know, not that was just a mistake. I mean, most softball fields, I think, have rocks under them like that, and then they put the limestone on top so it drains.
Yeah.
Most of the time, they weren't bad. I can't complain too much about them. you know, a couple of times they forgot to drag the field or lime it, but that happened.
I remember distinctly the day that you came in the office, and there was an issue with the field not being fared or whatever. You were talking to Larry, and he said something about, he was a baseball coach, and they prepare the baseball field and not the softball field. You guys are going at it. All of a sudden, Art was in his office, and you guys took it into the Art's office. Of course, Art, he didn't want any kind of confrontation at all. So I could see him sigh.
I don't remember that specifically, but I remember one time Drexler and I don't know if it was Harold or Art, they didn't drag the field one day, and the other team was there, and you know, and Drexler was very, you know, appeasing, just taking care of it. But otherwise, I don't have any complaints. I thought everything was fine. And enjoyed it, and then, you know, as Pam got older, Angie Dardis was my neighbor, and of course started working with her, and at a certain point you can tell this girl's going to be good, you know. All of a sudden when they stop aiming it and start firing it, I can still remember Angie one time, I was over at the park, and she said, "I think I got it," you know, and I had a catcher over at the Farley Park, and I could tell.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I mean, Molly Miner, the same thing. At a certain point, she wasn't, you know, that good, and then all of a sudden it just clicked, and she could fire.
Yeah.
And so it was enjoyable. I met a lot of nice kids that had middle school, but a lot of them came from, you know, St. Joe's or Epworth, and very few. I don't think any run-ins with parents. Okay. You know, one time a parent came in my house, and he really was defensive. He said, "My daughter doesn't know I'm here, but I just wondered, you know, is she gonna have a chance to play?" And we talked about it, and I said, "Well, she's having trouble at second base, but I can try her in the outfield." She eventually became all conference in the outfield.
Okay,
became a dentist. Sarah Round.
Okay, oh yeah.
Yeah. But when she was at second base, she just didn't have the hands for it. But that's the only parent that I can think of. After you called me the other day, I was thinking, if you asked me about softball, I can't think of I'm sure there must have been, but I can't think of any parent that was pissed off at me, you know?
Yeah,
which is a miracle.
Well, sort of, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've heard other softball coaches say some of the stories they've told me. Wallard's trying to hire a softball coach, and the lady next door is a teacher in Dubuque. They she went to Wallard, and her father-in-law is president of the Booster Club. When I was out here, I had to cut a tree down. It was dying this fall, and he came over and he said, "I got a job for you if you want it." And I said, "What's that?" "Well, the Wallard softball, they're looking for..." He said, "Their parents are getting desperate," he said. I said, no thanks. But, yeah, to get through without, you know, anger. And I don't, you guys probably know more than I. You probably have parents come to you.
Well,
you know,
I know I've never had a softball issue that I can ever recall. But I'm just thinking, what for you, it was had to be a great sense of satisfaction to make something there wasn't there.
Oh, at all. Yeah, yeah, I did. I felt awfully good about it.
Yeah,
and when I started, I didn't know whether I would, you know, coach. I could coach softball. I didn't know whether I could coach girls. But it just worked out, I think, anyway. And but it wasn't that it was a chore. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I can tell you. And if I hadn't had the opportunity to go to UD, which was a bad chapter in my life,
okay,
I would have stayed, you know.
Yeah.
I never even considered it until the Clark College called me one day and said, would you be interested in coaching? Yeah. And that's when I started thinking, geez, I got my pension. I can do something else.
Yeah.
So I went in an interview at Clark. I had two interviews. I thought I was going to get the job. And they gave it to an alumnus, you know. Okay, so I went back. And then UD called me. But I didn't call them. I got another story to tell
okay.
you. But UD called me, and so I interviewed, and they hired me. But at the same time, Loris's job was open. And of all three schools, the one I would have preferred was Loris.
Yeah.
So I applied for the Loris job. And my brother, the doctor, he had an agreement with Loris that he was going to fund a chair, give him $1 million at his death. And so I applied to Loris. Never heard back from him. Not even a letter saying, we got your application. And I, you know, three of us went to that school. I sent two of my kids there. I was all Northeast Iowa, coached twice, and yet couldn't. And I told my brother that. He was really pissed off. He said, if that's the kind of people they are.
Okay.
So I remember telling Noonan, I said, I'm the most expensive softball coach in Loris College history, because he pulled his... He gave it to the presentation nuns, you know, instead of Loris College.
Well, who was the AD at that time?
If you give me his name, I could probably remember.
Okay.
It was partly my fault. I guess they had I don't know who it was. They had a softball search committee. I sent my letter to the athletic director. And, of course, the financial people were always visiting. They'd stop and see Danny every year and try to butter him up, you know. And so Danny was telling him about me. Oh, we're sorry about that, you know. So I got a letter from the athletic director, you know, one of those, if we did something wrong, we apologize. I showed Dale, and I told Dale, I said, don't do that, you know, don't refuse to give him money just because of I didn't get that job. But
what year was that done?
Well, it would have been the same year, 87, same year I got the It was all three of the Clark, Loris, and UD jobs come up at the same time.
Not 87.
That's when I started coaching softball. Oh, at Western Duke, that's right. It would have been 2002.
Okay. Right.
And I don't remember who the athletic director was. but I never did get an interview, which is the only thing I wanted. I wanted to.
Yeah.
And I knew I was, you know, I was older. I was a man.
Yeah.
You know, and most colleges didn't like that. They wanted a young woman. But I told Danny, don't refuse. And I told the recruiters to call me. I mean, the financial people at Loris. What can we do? I said, I told my brother, you know, don't refuse to do that. Don't spite your face. Cut off your nose to spite your face, you know. And he said, oh, there's a lot of good charities you can give money to. So it cost him.
Wick and I are now on the Hall of Fame committee at Loris. So we get the nominees and select the candidates for the next year. So we had our meetings in October for the next year. It gets kind of. I started the Hall of Fame at West Dubuque when I was there, and it wasn't too difficult, but. When you start getting situations where you have to go back 40, 50 years.
Yeah, yeah. They'd have to have an old timers committee or something.
Well, what we did this year is we have a legacy selection, and we'll pick somebody from 1935 or whatever, you know. To
that would be almost impossible.
Yeah,
and probably not real, because those guys would be dead. Their families are probably dead.
Yeah.
It would mean more for. But I don't follow like their athletics much anymore. I would know the ones when I was there.
Yeah.
And I think almost everybody I've ever, you know, the people that were from that era, I would have known, and they belonged.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. For example, when you get into a situation with like for wrestling, well. And then you establish records. Well, in the 60s or 50s, they only wrestled maybe, let's say, 15 times. Shit, now they wrestle 30, 40 times.
Yeah.
So you can't compare, you know, whatever. So.
Yeah. Well, that would be hard, especially if you hadn't followed everything in the last few years. You'd probably pretty much have to go to other people's opinions.
Yeah.
Coaches.
Exactly.
I know you mentioned that wrestling 15. You know, the thing that the most disappointing thing for me as a softball coach was not going to the state tournament.
Okay.
But at that time, and not many people realize it, unless you're really into the high school sports. But remember, in those days, there was only two classes of basketball and softball. And so every year, we'd have to end up playing Linmar or Jefferson or North Scott or
Larry Neymar and Jefferson.
Yeah. Oh, every year we'd have a good team, and one year we won 5 games. You know, today if you win 5 games, you're state champions. But it takes maybe 2 games to get to the state tournament. One year we beat all the Dubuque schools. We beat Bettendorf, North Scott, and then Jefferson beat us. You know, so you just, but people wouldn't realize that the average parent. You know, we're not playing Edco. we're playing some huge school.
I get it. I mean, the issue came up, you know, of course, when last year for West Dubuque to move to the Mississippi Valley Conference. And, these people were so apprehensive. Well, we play, you know, back when we played West Manchester, and how are we going to shit, it'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
We're gonna keep
football will be the toughest,
right?
You know,
but if you take a look historically, when I was there and beyond, there'll be 25 kids out for football. You know, as freshmen,
so every class
they'll feed into. There'll be 30 to 40 kids available.
That'll be the hardest. But like baseball and softball, basketball, those guys already play them.
Exactly.
You know, but not every week,
right.
You know, and that's that becomes the problem. That was getting back to softball. That was my biggest disappointment.
Yeah.
Disappointment. I just have to say how much I enjoyed it, and I was sure glad. And looking back, you know, I remember at the time when Larry mentioned it to me, what am I getting myself into? And then later thinking, I'm glad they did ask me, you know.
Yeah.
And
I've encouraged
other older people not to worry about getting into it. You know, you want to coach, go ahead. And
you must remember you went through all the bus rides to Timbuktu and back.
Not so much. The bus drivers weren't real happy with me.
Okay.
Because I hated those buses. Oh, God. Oh, no. You get in there and you know, I drove a school, or I mean a coach bus. So after I retired as a teacher, I drove for Stratton.
Okay.
And, but, you know, those buses, they can't turn around very fast. And they're so slow and lumbering and uncomfortable and hot. And so I just always requested 2 Suburbans.
Okay.
And
of course, much better.
Yeah, but the bus drivers didn't like me because it cost them.
They didn't get paid.
And they weren't happy. But it was, you know, so much better. We could listen to the radio. If we felt like stopping at this restaurant or that, you know, drive-in, we could. and air conditioned. So the administration was good to me. They let me do it.
Yeah.
They never, you know, forced us or anything. But I drove a school bus after I quit. Also, I drove a school bus to Dubuque.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's how I got my commercial driver's license. I wanted to get a job, and there was this tour. Are we getting off the subject here? Is that? We were